interview with Lieutenant Commander Sheldon M. Roll, 13 of April, 1996. Mr. Roll, perhaps we could start by you giving us a little bit of background history on when you joined the RCN and your early training as an aviator, either fixed wing or helicopter.
Yeah, okay, well, I began flying in 43 and with the Air Force, did my training with the Air Force, and later transferred to the Royal Navy in 45 and then to the RCN in 47. And I trained as a fixed wing pilot and with a number of squadrons in the RCN and with VX-10. I first joined VX-10 for the carrier trials on Bonaventure in 56-7. And I completed test pilot training in the United States at Patuxent in 57-58. Returned to VX-10, became the project officer, or project operations officer, and then XO, and eventually CO in 62. I took a helicopter conversion in 62 and eventually qualified on the CHSS-2, but I'm not really what you would call a highly qualified helicopter pilot. But I have flown it, and I have flown it aboard ship, and continued, and then finally retired in 76.
So would you have received the conversion training on the Sea King prior to you assuming command of VX-10 in 62?
When I when VX-10, I had VX-10, and we were given the put in charge of accepting the CHSS to the Sea King for the Canadian Navy from Sikorsky. I took a team down to Connecticut, and we did a conversion, all of us. There were some technical people there who did some special training, but the pilots all converted, and we accepted the three helicopters at that time.
So people like Lieutenant Commander Joe Sosnikoski would have been going down for the conversion at the same time?
Joe, I believe, did his at a different time. I think he was at Patuxent at that time doing his test pilot training. I'm not sure. You'd have to check that with Joe. Ken Gibbs and
Jerry Moore?
No. Ken Gibbs. I can't remember. There was Grossmith, I think, and Ted Fallon, and a couple others.
So when you assume...
I beg your pardon. Sosnikoski was there on that conversion. Yes, he was. As a matter of fact, yes, he took that and then became the project officer.
How long would the conversion training normally take?
I don't know. We spent, I believe it was, between 2 and 3 weeks there.
And that would include not only flying time, but that would include any coursework that was involved?
Yeah, all the groundwork. And it was, and then followed by some limited flying. It wasn't an awful lot of flying, but we all qualified on the aircraft at that time. Those with helicopter experience, of course, were much better qualified, if you like.
Right. And the first of the Sea Kings came back following that conversion?
Yeah. And Joe Sosnikoski, I believe, brought the first one back.
Right. So this was all taking place at the same time that the trials were taking place with the bear trap system when you were CO of VX-10?
No, we hadn't really got into it at that time. There had been some trials done on a simulated setup in Ottawa, I believe it was. But VX-10 didn't get its project directive until, I believe, the fall of 62, I guess it was
63. Assiniboine would have been coming out of refit and making her way around to Shearwater.
We got the project directive. Again, I can't remember the exact date. And we in VX10 then made an appreciation, our appreciation of that project, of what would be required to do the project. And that was a very interesting period. I think the project directive in retrospect was a very good one. And that was Jim Atwood's effort mainly.
Right.
But it was a very good one. It was one that did not need a lot of adjustment as we went on. And when you think we were in an area that no one knew very much about, this was extremely important. And the previous trials were trials of putting a helicopter on a deck and a ship,
right,
which was fine, but it laid the groundwork for the haul down. But a number of things came out of those initial trials, which all reflected in the project directive.
When you say that Jim Atwood had a lot to do with the project directive, is that because of his experience with the Ottawa trials?
I believe it was with, I wouldn't say just one person's experience, I think it was all those involved had brought the project to the point where it could be defined quite accurately. Jim did that defining. And sort of set out the limits of operation that we were to explore.
Right.
And he did that extremely well, I think.
So what departments would you be talking about when you refer to these other individuals? Would staff, officer, air,
well,
helicopters have
they
a
were
role?
All involved, yes. They were all had a role in it. Jim was with, what did they call it, Dan AC? ENAR.
Director of Naval Air Requirements?
Air Requirements, I think. He was in the technical thing working for John Doherty at that time. And that was the department. VX-10 had a peculiar relationship in that administratively it was responsible to the local authorities in Halifax for discipline and promotions and things like that. But as far as our work requirement was concerned, we were directly responsible to Ottawa.
Right.
So we bypassed local authorities. If we required anything, we went straight to Ottawa. And so we worked with Captain Doherty and his team there. They were the ones that tied together the Naval Air Requirements staff input.
Could you also assume, too, that VX-10, if they could bypass the local authorities, they could go directly to Ferry Aviation if they needed something as well?
We did. And we did this on numerous occasions. And, in fact, we, as a group, were able to keep ferries on the path. We actually did design work for them.
Right, which is very unusual.
Well, it's unusual. Most certainly is unusual. But in retrospect, it was, I think, what made the project possible, because there were failure points there that were very, very, to me, very, very significant, and we overcame them.
Would the same hold true for VX-10's relationship with the other major contractor, which was Doughty, which was in Ajax, Ontario?
Absolutely, exactly the same. And, and, for example, now we're jumping here a bit, but in Assiniboine, as soon as we got our project, I flew out with Peter Charlton and flew out to Assiniboine. In my background, I had considerable experience with flight deck operations, both as a pilot and as a landing signals officer, and knew pretty well what certain things had to be provided for in the ship. So we drew out to Esquimalt to see Assiniboine. And a number of the things that we saw there, some small, some a little more significant, the fire system, just the tie-down system, the hangar itself, there were tremendous inadequacies. We could go straight to Ottawa. We didn't have to go through command level type of things for these things. We wrote our report, we put in the mandatory requirements and changes, and it was taken and then put through the system. Our contact was directly with Ottawa, which made these things possible without a lot of interference. Interference. Mm-hmm. You know, the Admiral was very jealous of his ship, and he didn't want a lieutenant commander telling him what was wrong, but we knew from a flying point of view what was wrong, and were able to use Ottawa as our protector, if you like, and that's how we got things done.
Do you think that when you say that the Admiral was protective of his ships, do you think that that's due in part to the fact that the Saint Laurent class was only 6 years old? They were entertaining the notion of cutting them up and putting the hangars aboard and the flight deck and embarking a helicopter?
Yeah, I don't think the helicopter was not welcomed with open arms by the seamen. You know, this was an intrusion.
Right.
And they weren't convinced by any manner of means. And to tie up one of his assets for trials,
mm-hmm.
wherein the trials were pretty well under our control, pretty hard to take. It normally doesn't work that way. And if we required the ship at a specific time, we told them. We didn't go and say, when can you provide it for us? We said we needed this such and such time. So operational control of that ship was still under the Admiral, but we had a great influence on it. So that, and I think that did create some problems. And certainly when it came to working with Blandy and what have you, there was friction because there's a seaman and there's an aviator telling them what he's
right
going to have to do and how he's going to have to improve this, that, and the other thing. And of course, he had no idea of flying and the requirements for it, no idea of where the project was eventually going. He's more concerned of how many people would he have to help stand duty watch or something like this.
Right.
That's being a bit facetious. But that was the case. And the significant thing is we were able to go directly to Ottawa for our problems. And our problems got resolved rather quickly.
Having said that, though, would you also agree that there were people from the surface fleet that were very supportive of the idea of embarking the helicopters? I'm thinking of people Commander Timbrell, for example, who seemed to be an early supporter of the idea. Landy Moore was another one from his experiences during the Korean War that was very big on the notion of at least trying this concept. So,
well, I think there'd been enough background work done. Yes. No, I'm not trying to say they didn't. I think perhaps it was more they didn't know the impact of this on a small ship.
Right.
It's quite a large involvement. It's a major weapon system on a small ship suddenly. And when you thrust it upon somebody who has never had anything like that, then, you know, that you're demanding changes and there's a reluctance to change.
Right.
So it was that kind of feeling. People came around. Even Walter Blandy came around and was quite acceptable. But initially, this was something that they didn't have a grasp on. For example, when I got the project, and I say we did our appreciation, I can remember the day extremely well because I had Joe Sosnkowski writing one section and Charlton one and myself one. And the thing that I was concerned about was we did not know what was going to happen when you put a winch on a helicopter in a pitching, rolling, heaving ship. And to me, the simple answer was, okay, if the reactions to whatever forces you feel in that aircraft are natural, then we're all right. But if the reaction at some point in this thing is abnormal, for example, if you got out here from the ship and instead of coming back as you normally would, but you had to do something different, that would be abnormal, and you couldn't accept that.
Right.
And those were areas we were going into that were totally unknown. And so my concern was, as the CEO and the head of the project, was those are the areas we must approach in a proper testing evaluation format and check. And so our project and Joe set it up so that this was a gradual building of the envelope for the aircraft. This took time. I was called down to the CO's office shortly after things got going. I think just shortly after Assiniboine got around to the East Coast. And he said, well now, can we get the media aboard in let's say a month and take photographs of all this? And I said, you can, but all you're going to get is a month's worth of work. You're not going to get a completed project. They thought, and I say that in a general term, the thinking was the work had been done, just a matter to glue the parts together and put it aboard the ship, and you have a working system. And so I convinced them that we can't and we won't do that, because that would be totally irresponsible. There's so much at stake. But that was the early approach, and that we had to overcome, and we did, and people accepted it, as you know, but they don't want to go to sea without the helicopter now.
That's right. Perhaps you can take us back to the early trials, testing the hull down out at Shearwater. As I understand it, it was started off using sheer brute force, manpower, and a truck to haul down a helicopter to test the concept, and it built from there. And I understand from talking to Lieutenant Ken Gibbs that an actual bear trap was built on a platform and installed into the ground out at Shearwater, mm-hmm. and they did in the neighborhood of 150 trials, mm-hmm. Which I've never seen any documentation on that, but that strikes me as being fascinating. It's a missing piece of the picture here.
Yeah, I think Joe can give you a better rundown on that. And that particular sequence, I think he was involved in that. Yeah, they did. It was... it was rudimentary, but they were essential trials to test the bear trap and its ability to trap. There were serious problems, though. When it initially started, let's get this thing straight now. When it initially started, the ferry design was for... the ferry design was that the main haul down,
the probe,
would be mounted on the cable attached to the ship.
Right.
And this would be hauled up into the aircraft and secured to the aircraft. When we went to look at it, the first one they had, and I looked at it, and Peter was there, and I believe Joe, and my reaction was, absolutely no way. Should that thing have to be disengaged under some tension and come flinging down on that ship, anybody could be there, killed, or damaged the ship or decapitated or whatever. It was just totally... That was a significant point in that. That was a stopper for the project. And this again I remember clearly. We had a meeting. We went over it thoroughly. And I believe I called headquarters and said, we have a problem. And at the moment, we've stopped flying because this is dangerous and we're not going to fly. That night or day after, Peter Charlton called me and was late. And he says, I've got an idea. So the next morning, he presented a sketch of his idea, which essentially is a system that's there now. And we took it, jumped in an airplane, flew to Ottawa, and presented it and said, we think this is it. We talked to Ferries too. And they realized when we told them the problem that this was a serious problem and they didn't know what to do. So we went to Ottawa, and because of that contact, they brought in the engineers and whatnot, we immediately got a go-ahead to change the design, Peter's design. And we took it to Ferries, and they redesigned it, and then we were off again and into it better.
So was the probe, was the process then reversed?
We built that rather large thing inside the, you've seen inside the helicopter.
Inside the Sea King.
Yeah, the Sea King.
Instead of having it down on the deck.
And then there was just the small probe that came up and connected, and that was the design. Yeah.
You mentioned the problem with the original design. Can I take it to mean also too that by having the probe on the deck in the bear trap when it would hook up to the helicopter, that would create undue stress on the airframe?
Well,
with the way it was originally designed too,
it could, but that was not the major concern to me. Now,
it was if the cable had to be let go.
And we didn't know. See, I was trying to say, we did not know what would happen. We knew the pilot had an emergency release. So that if this thing started to cause some kind of motion to the thing and it got out, a pilot-induced oscillation of some description, that he would release under duress, instrument, dark, and so on, and the danger would be below. That was the main thing.
So when you say that Peter Charlton came up with the new design and that was discussed with the engineers at Ferry Aviation, I also assume that some conversation would have taken place between VX-10 and probably Sikorsky to see about installing the probe in the Sea King?
Oh yes, that all followed. The first step was the recognition of the problem. Second step was the redesign and discussions in between with Ottawa, a number of them. And so then there was a trip, I believe, to Sikorsky and discussions with their team as to this type of fitting.
How would you characterize the relationship that VX-10 specifically and the RCN had with Sikorsky and their engineers?
I think, from my knowledge of it, it was okay. I don't think we had a great problem with them at all. Not that I can recall. There may have been incidents where there could have been some disagreements, but I don't recall any major ones. And I know the USN was interested in what we were doing because we went down and briefed them on more than one occasion.
Right.
As to what we were doing.
Do you remember any occasions when you were CEO of VX-10 where engineers from Sikorsky would be sent up to deal with any problems, or could that be something that could be handled over the telephone or...
No, I think it rings a dim bell in the back of my head that this had occurred on more than one occasion. The interchange of whether we flew down with equipment or whether, in fact, they came up, and I suspect they came up
So the problem has been identified and the new design has been drawn up. Meanwhile, trials are still going on.
In a very preliminary area.
On the prototype that's based at Shearwater.
I don't think that one based at Shearwater is a little big in my mind. Because of that, I tend to want to say it had limited value. I could be corrected because of time. I just can't recall that too well.
Right. How long a process was it to change the system once the design had been drawn up and the conversations had taken place between VX-10 and Ferry Aviation, roughly?
Surprisingly short time, considering, because it was recognized right away that that was... Once we got the approval for the and design for the installation, it was very... In the helicopter, Ferry's end of it was fairly simple as far as the probe in the ship was concerned, because it was just a small probe. I can't think of it. If I said 6 months, I'd probably be over.
All right.
It was fairly quick.
And so while this is all going on, and Assiniboine's out on the East Coast, VX-10 is also responsible for overseeing the fitment of various equipment aboard Assiniboine and making sure that that meets their VX-10 specifications?
Yeah, and it meets the specifications we set out, which we like to think were reflection of operational requirements as much as possible. Major problems that we had were firefighting and fuel storage, firefighting, size of the hangar. And I believe, I think those were the main things. Yeah. And the other things that we were doing, we had that dummy helicopter, and I believe we were doing some trials with it as far as maneuvering it.
The traversing in and out of the hangar?
That became a major problem.
And this, we'll get to this a little bit later on, but I assume that you're talking about the tail probe that would straighten out the helicopter before it was traversed in to the hangar. When you talk about the hangar problems, was that due largely in part to the fact that the RCN was just about ready to procure the Cayman helicopter, which was a smaller aircraft than the Sea King?
I can't answer that one. I don't know. And that's quite possible, because that was hot on the list before the Sea King. And the helicopter, the hangar, was small when you consider the work that had to be done on it and people having to work in that small, confined area.
So there wasn't very much clearance from the rotor head to the top of the hangar.
Well, the whole thing was tight. And, of course, it's fairly high up on the destroyer, so that any ship's movement was exaggerated where they were working, and it just wasn't the best of situations.
What were some of the other problems that you were alluding to? The avgas storage problem?
Yeah, there was a problem with avgas storage and fueling.
Would that have been
I can't remember the details of that. Now, I think it was... It probably was tied in with the fact of the lack of firefighting, proper firefighting equipment for an aviation fire. And
I assume that this would be JP-5 fuel that you're talking about, which was highly volatile.
Very volatile, and the chance of a fire when you're handling it in an aircraft and whatnot is certainly there. And also just fuel leakages. Things like this.
Right.
I just can't remember the details. I remember those were very serious problems, and we had to get extra pump systems into the ship. Those were major modifications to the ship.
To increase the fire suppression ability?
Yeah.
In case there was a fire on board?
Yeah. And that was major. A sort of dedicated pumping system for that.
All right. We'll just stop here for a moment and turn the tape over.